Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question and answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require operator assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Connect workshop, Healthy Eating and Managing Weight Changes During Cancer Treatment. This is a very important call today, a workshop, because it's a topic that is of concern to all of you on the call today. This is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations, and it is because of that collaboration that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. Now, we have over 858 participants on the call today, and you come from all over the United States. And we also have international participants from Canada, the Netherlands, United Kingdom, and Venezuela. So you really come from all over the world. And I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to all the materials you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is information about our speakers and the topics they'll be addressing. There also is information about all of our collaborating organizations, all the different organizations that are a resource to each of you with their 800 number and websites in addition to Cancer Care. And there is an evaluation form, and I would ask you all at the end of the program today to complete that evaluation form. When you think about it, who but each of you can best tell us the topics that you would like us to address going forward? That's really important for us to actually know what you would like us to offer going forward. Indeed, this particular workshop today, this whole issue around healthy eating and issues around weight changes during treatment is one that many of you have written about in your evaluations and other programs. And so we're doing this workshop, and indeed we're planning many workshops going forward, and so the timing of your making suggestions could not be better. We try very hard to offer programs that you're requesting just because we feel that you're the best source of telling us what we should be doing here. So please tell us what you think we should be doing, and we'll try very hard to do it. Now, today's activity was made possible by a restricted educational grant from HealthSyn, and I really want to thank them for their support of this workshop. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today. I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Jennifer Ligabel. And Dr. Ligabel is Assistant Professor, Department of Medicine, Harvard Medical School, Attending Physician, Adult Oncology, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. And Dr. Ligabel is going to address an overview of cancer treatments, what causes treatment-related changes in weight, impact on lean body mass and strength, and weight management strategies. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Ligabel.
Welcome, everyone, today. I'd like to start really thinking about why are we talking about healthy eating and weight and cancer? And I think a lot of you know from all of the headlines in the newspapers and things that there are definitely links between things like what person eats, how much they weigh, how much exercise they do, and cancer. There are many, many, many studies that follow populations of people that tell us that people who have healthier diets and who exercise a bit more and who weigh a little less are at lower risk of developing a lot of common cancers. This doesn't mean that people that exercise can't get cancer, but it means that the risk can be a little bit lower, and the same for other factors. The reason we're talking about this today is that there are also studies that show that these types of behaviors can matter after cancer diagnosis. And there's a lot of evidence that's mounting that suggests that things like eating patterns and exercise and weight can be important after diagnosis and could potentially improve somebody's chances of not having more difficulties from their cancer. So it really provides something that a person can do to help themselves after a cancer diagnosis. We also know that there are a lot of other benefits of things like healthy eating and exercising after being diagnosed with cancer. And there have been hundreds of studies that show that if you take somebody that isn't exercising very much or has a not as healthy diet and you put them on a program with a healthier lifestyle, that they will experience things like feeling better, having more energy, having fewer symptoms. So there's a lot of reasons to be really excited about this topic. The other reason that it's really important to talk about is that we know that a lot of the types of treatments that we use to treat cancer can have an impact on a person's weight or their physical activity patterns or their diets. I don't think I need to tell people that when you go through cancer therapy, your tastes change. And sometimes people eat more, sometimes they eat less. There are certain diseases where people experience a lot of weight loss as a result of their cancer therapy, and other types of treatment for other cancers where people gain a lot of weight during therapy. I think that in the past, we've really focused on what's called cachexia, or non-purposeful weight loss during therapy. But in the last few years, there's been increasing attention as well on the fact that many cancer patients, especially patients with things like breast cancer and prostate cancer, so some of the most common cancers, also the treatments for those can cause a significant amount of weight gain in patients who go through therapy. We don't completely understand why one person would gain weight and another one wouldn't, but there are certain patterns that we see when we look at large groups of patients who receive cancer treatment for these different types of malignancies. One of the things that we see is that people that get chemotherapy oftentimes will have weight loss for a short period of time, but will gain weight over the longer period of time. And sometimes that's because they become more tired and they decrease their exercise patterns. Some studies have shown that exercise remains reduced in many patients even years after they receive chemotherapy. So reduction in physical activity is a big part of weight gain in some cancers. In other cancers, weight gain can really occur because of changes in hormone levels. Women who go through menopause as a result of chemotherapy seem to be especially at risk of weight gain. And this is because normally with menopause, people's metabolism changes and many people will gain weight normally in that time period. When you go through menopause really quickly as a result of therapy, sometimes that weight gain can be exacerbated. We also know that changes in hormones can cause changes in body composition, and this is something we see very frequently, both in breast cancer patients who go through these changes as a result of endocrine therapy they take, and in men with prostate cancer who take treatments that change their hormone levels. And what we often see in this situation is that people gain body fat and lose muscle mass. So these are all changes that can come about as a result of cancer therapy. We know, however, that there are things that people can do about these changes, and I think this is one of the things that has really been amazing to see over the last 10 years or so are the number of lifestyle-changing studies that have been conducted in cancer patients, really showing that it is feasible to help people consume healthier diets, exercise more, and lose weight after a cancer diagnosis through a variety of different programs. These studies are generally small. Many of them have been conducted in only one hospital setting, but when you put all of these data together, they really do provide some very nice guidelines for healthy living behaviors in cancer patients that can really optimize things like weight and physical activity and diet. The American Cancer Society a few years ago put together some guidelines for weight, nutrition, and physical activity that provide some common sense guidelines to people trying to keep weight in a healthy range, consuming a diet that's high in fruits, vegetables, and fiber, and low in processed foods and red meats, and also low in alcohol, as well as regular physical activity, 150 minutes of regular exercise a week, coupled with some strength training. The American Society of Clinical Oncology has recently also produced some patient and provider materials around weight and lifestyle for cancer survivors, and I encourage everyone to check these out. They're available through cancer.net, and they really provide some very nice guidelines for thinking about healthy lifestyles, both during cancer therapy and afterwards, to help people start to make changes that can help them feel better in the long run and manage their weight, help them exercise more, have a better diet, and have more energy after cancer diagnosis. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Ligabel. That was excellent in setting the context for today's program, and I know there'll be a lot of questions for you during the Q&A. And our next speaker is Donna Wilson. Donna Wilson is a pulmonary clinical nurse specialist, fitness coordinator, Integrative Medicine Center, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Ms. Wilson is going to address the role of physical exercise and finding practical ways to incorporate exercise and movement into your lifestyle. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Ms. Wilson.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for having me today. I am very strong on how I feel about exercise. I think exercise is really medicine, and I think that regular exercise can start from the minute you have your diagnosis on. And, you know, I don't use the word sometimes exercise as much, Samara, or fitness. I use keep moving, because my role is when people are more sedentary, they have more problems. When we just look at all of the side effects of cancer treatment, you know, pain and fatigue and poor chest flexibility, muscle weakness, you could have increase or decrease in weight, body image, so many aspects of anxiety, depression. And then I go to the side of the benefits of exercise. Well, exercise will decrease your level of fatigue. It can help you maintain your body weight, whether you want to maintain what you are or even lose a little bit of weight. It can improve your flexibility, and so you can prevent the stiffness. It helps sometimes, and many patients decrease their pain. And also then it goes with strength training, goes along with improving your balance and your posture. Also, so many people, when they start feeling stronger and feeling like their body's really moving in all unison, they have less problems with body image or less problems with bone pain or decrease in the depression. So my goal is that I want to encourage all of you to improve the quantity and the quality of your exercise performance. Now, you just heard that the American Cancer Society and the American College of Sports Medicine put together that we would like everyone to do 150 minutes a week. Now, it doesn't mean that you have to do 30 minutes five times a week. It means that you could split it up. You could do 10 minutes twice a day. You could do 15 minutes twice a day, whatever you can do, but it's the consistency of doing it. And I think that's what makes the difference, is that I see people have less complications of their cancer treatments when they exercise. And I have to say, I have been working with exercise and cancer patients for the last 12 years now. And I must admit, designing programs that meet their needs is the most important thing. So some of you might be more, if you're wheelchair bound, we can have exercises versus if you're upright and functional. It really depends on the treatment that you're getting and what's going on, so how we design that program. But most importantly, I would always design a program to use all the large muscle groups, the leg muscles, you know, the shoulder muscles, really those muscles that are really keeping us very functional in our functional patterns. I think when you exercise a program, I know what the activities that you would be doing. So maybe I could accentuate on those activities. If you're a walker, maybe we could put hand weights on or light ankle weights on to increase the resistance. So when you're walking, you can burn calories or improve strength. It depends what we need to look for you. I think most importantly, to stay motivated to exercise, is you want to start slowly. You want to, you know, want to make that physical activity part of your daily routine. You want to organize the program around treatment days. There may be that, you know, some people the day after treatment they feel great, but then maybe the third or fourth day they don't feel well. So you want to work it around that you can really do the exercises, but still maintain that rest periods when you're not feeling well. I think it's important for you all to, on a calendar, to track your progress. You know, track what you're doing each day, and how you see the improvements, that you're walking further or you can do more stair climbing. I think that Some people find that if they exercise to music or if they have an enthusiastic instructor or that provides them energizing, positive, empowering information, they really feel the difference. I think that over the years, maybe, you know, I think of all the people that I've exercised, and they come in and they feel really stiff, and then at the end of the hour, they're walking out, and they're feeling great. And I think it's most important here where I work is after I do a class, everybody always seems really much more energized, and I evaluate that because they come in and they're quiet and they set up and they're ready to exercise. At the end of the hour, everybody's really chatty and really feels good. So it's really important to maintain that physical ability. There are things that we, you know, all do for fundraising is walks and some. There's a whole big list of things you can do, like fly fishing for breast cancer patients. Also, I'm also the captain of a dragon boat team, which is for breast cancer survivors. I also have a boat that's for all cancer survivors. And what that does is it's a team sport, and we get out there and we work hard and we are synchronized and we go to festivals and we really compete against other teams. But the most important thing is to see and work together as a team or work together. Some people like teams and some people like to do it independent. But the most, what if I can just say that being sedentary is probably the worst thing we can do for our bodies. Even when you don't feel well, to get up and to walk around, or now that summer's here, to go swimming, to keep the flexibility of your upper body. You want to always do a little bit of an endurance training so that you can keep your heart rate up and so that you can really walk without feeling so short of breath. And also by increasing the heart rate, you know, you increase good blood flow down to all the rest of the tissues and the muscles of the body. So remember, exercise is really beneficial. And it doesn't matter what stage. I deal with patients and clients from zero stage to stage four. I just modify the exercises so I can get them to move and feel good. And most importantly, there's tons of research that's shown that cancer exercise is safe now, and we can do it during and after exercise. So my goal for you is try to exercise 2 to 5 times a week. You know, for your cardiac workout, maybe find a bike or a treadmill or do some stair climbing, which we have always all readily available to us. Strength training can be using light weights or bottles of water. You don't have to get anything fancy. But really coordinate, most importantly, your exercises with your pattern of breathing. Remember that the breathing out is your strength of your breath. So you might start doing exercises in the chair, or you might start doing exercises standing. But most importantly, do them and try to stay motivated to do them. Again, 3 times a week would be the excellent thing I would suggest. For your strength training, you can, for your legs, you can do knee lifts, you can do wall push-ups. Most of the exercises that I'm telling you right now is really good for almost everyone, and I think that's what's important. So the commitment to exercise, to improve your flexibility, to improve your strength, to improve your aerobic fitness, and improve your self-esteem and self-confidence and your body image. So remember, I believe that exercise is medicine, and good luck to you all. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Donna. Wonderful presentation. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. And our next presenter is Mary Marion, and Mary is a clinical dietitian and instructor, University of Arizona, Colleges of Medicine and Agriculture Life Sciences. And Ms. Marion is going to address nutritional concerns and practical eating tips and recommendations. And Ms. Marion is going to address also people who've had weight loss during the treatment as well. It's now my pleasure to turn the program over to Ms. Marion.
Thank you. Well, I wanted to talk about the factors that arise that affect your oral intake, which then has an impact on your body weight. Some people, as we've already discussed, may gain weight with treatment, but some people also lose weight. And so I'm going to focus primarily on the weight loss. And at this point, we don't really know. If you come into treatment and you're overweight or you're obese, And some people that I've seen as patients actually get excited that they're going to lose some weight. And do we know whether that's good during treatment or not? We really don't know. Maybe slow, steady weight loss would be okay if you're really overweight or obese, but then some oncologists get really concerned about any change in weight. So if anybody has a question about whether weight loss during treatment is a good idea, I would say we don't know, but maybe others on the panel have some different thoughts. But anyways, the ability to eat sufficient calories and protein that are needed for maintaining your weight, and I would focus most importantly on lean body mass, because during the continuum of care, you go through different types of treatment. You may go through surgery, you may go through chemo, you may go through radiation, you may go through one of those, all of those, or maybe none of those, but maintaining your lean body mass is really critical. We're finding more and more studies are coming out that show that people who have lost sufficient lean body mass, even before they start treatment, that they don't tolerate treatment as well. And this is problematic because then you may experience delays in your treatment or your treatment may be discontinued. So we really are focusing now on maintaining lean body mass at least during treatment, and then as Donna just said, hopefully doing some exercises post-treatment to actually improve your lean body mass. So what are the biggest problems that I see that affect individuals' ability to maintain their weight and their lean body mass is anorexia or poor appetite. Now, this can occur because of the disease. It can occur because you're going through treatment. You just had surgery. You have chemo. You have radiation. And this is a huge challenge because when nothing sounds good, it's really difficult or even want to eat in order to get in any type of food. And obviously, this is going to impact your weight. You're going to lose weight, and you're going to lose lean body mass. And a lot of times in treatment, I've been working with cancer survivors for over 20 years, and a lot of times we said, oh, you lose weight during treatment, that's normal, and you'll just regain it afterwards. And we don't really think that's a really great idea anymore because many times you're gaining a lot of body fat and maybe a little bit of lean body mass, but we're trying to prevent that trajectory from happening during treatment these days. Many of you may think of or have experienced early satiety, and early satiety is a term that we use when you just take a few bites of food and all of a sudden you're full. And everybody's concerned because you're not eating enough, and how could you be full? You only took a couple bites. And that's related to the cancer, and it could also be related to the treatments as well. And then as Donna said, fatigue is very common. And fatigue can go either way. It can promote weight gain or it can promote weight loss. And the problem with fatigue is that you may be just too tired to eat, especially if you live by yourself and you have to prepare your meals, and trying to even think about doing that is just too overwhelming. And sometimes when you have fatigue, many times you turn to comfort food, and that could be one of the problems on why some people are gaining weight during treatment is that they eat foods that make them feel good. Another problem that I see is taste changes, and so when nothing tastes good, I've had a lot of patients tell me it tastes like cardboard, it tastes like sand, they just don't want to eat. Obviously, that's going to impact your weight and lean body mass. And then a lot of people don't pay attention to constipation, and constipation is very common. It could be because of the pain meds people are on. It could be because of the chemotherapy. But also people don't think about you have to eat a sufficient amount of food to have bowel movements. You have to have some fluid in there for things to move through. You have to have some fiber. You have to have physical activity. So there's lots of factors that can promote constipation. And when you're constipated, it just has an overall impact on your desire to eat. So what do we do about all these problems? I would say the biggest thing is try to meet with a nutrition professional, a registered dietitian, nutritionist, or there may be others in your community who have a specialized emphasis and training in nutrition. And you are an individual, and if you can sit down with somebody and find out, target the problems that you're specifically having and not just going online and looking at information that may be too basic. That's what I usually find when I'm looking for things online. It may not target your needs. Certainly, there's lots of good information online that you potentially could use, but I would encourage you to sit down with somebody and try to determine what kind of issues are you individually experiencing. So some of the practical things that I as a dietitian recommend right off the bat to address a lot of the problems that I just talked about are small, frequent, nutrient-dense meals. And so to maintain lean body mass, we want to ensure that we're getting in enough protein. And any type of treatment you go through, surgery, chemo, radiation, those treatments are going to increase your need for protein on top of having a disease in general. So you want to make sure that you get enough protein, and that's usually challenging for a lot of patients when it's 70 to 100 grams is the goal that you're trying to achieve per day. You don't have a good appetite, you fill up very quickly, nothing tastes good, so how do I get all this protein in? So eating small, frequent meals during the day that have little amounts of protein and a little amounts of calories certainly can help close the gap by the end of the day between what your actual needs are and what you're actually getting in. Lots of times I use protein powder, have people make smoothies or put it in their cereals or other kinds of beverages that they're drinking during the day. Greek yogurt is a great, easy way to get more protein in your diet. Things like making your oatmeal with whole milk instead of water, so you're not expecting yourself to eat a huge more volume of food when you really don't feel like it and you're filling up quickly. Breakfast is the time when a lot of people have at least a decent appetite, and so if you can eat a little bit more at breakfast time or maybe have a little snack after breakfast on top of your breakfast, then that might help you better meet your nutritional needs by the end of the day. And then a lot of people are only used to eating three meals a day, and it's very uncomfortable for them to eat in between meals because if my mother was like your mother, she said you weren't allowed to eat in between meals. And that's a huge strategy that really can help you increase your intake throughout the day. I also see a lot of patients who are drinking water, and water is great. It helps you meet your fluid requirements, but it does not have any calories or protein. So, again, meeting with somebody to strategize, how can I augment my beverage intake in order to help me meet my calorie and protein needs? And then, as Donna said, exercise is medicine. It is very powerful. It can help increase your appetite. It can help maintain lean body mass. It can help with constipation. And the bottom line is it just makes you feel better overall. So you get a lot of benefits from doing, being more physically active. And as she said, I just can't say how much exercise is important, because when you don't feel good and you're tired, it's kind of like a double-edged sword. You know you should do it, but you just don't have the energy to do it. But because you can get so many benefits from just maybe doing 5 minutes here throughout the day, and it can slowly add up to 20, 30 minutes fairly easily, it's something that you really should think about. And then lastly, the biggest thing that I want to leave you with is talking about attitude, because when you're dealing with nutrition and lifestyle, it's what's your behavior and your attitude towards helping yourself. And I know it's really challenging to eat when you don't have an appetite. Things don't taste good. But you have to help yourself. And so you have to have a positive attitude and at least try to help. And I work with a lot of caregivers and the patient, and a lot of times the poor caregivers are so frustrated because the patient isn't helping participate in their own care. So I just wanted to leave you with that as far as trying to make changes in your physical activity as well as your nutrition, is that you have to take the first step yourself. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much. That was really outstanding. And also the fact that you have mentioned that we want caregivers to be listening to and to be as thoughtful about their own well-being as well. So this call is for everyone, both people living with cancer directly and people who are actually the caregivers as well. So thank you for that as well. Our next speaker is Dr. Stuart Fleischman. And Dr. Fleischman is founding director, Cancer Support Services, Continuum Cancer Centers of New York, Accreditation Surveyor, American College of Surgeons, Commission on Cancer. Dr. Fleischman is going to address a number of issues that are important for all of you to be aware of. He is going to address communicating with your healthcare team about your weight changes, coping with changes in body image, and quality of life concerns. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Fleischman.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Messner. What seemed to be a really simple topic has really gotten quite complex. So I'm going to spend a few minutes trying to sort of summarize and categorize all this. I think it may be more beneficial to everybody. Yes, communicating about your nutritional needs and your weight is vital, but that's something that your providers should be checking when you're going into for chemotherapy or radiation therapy and status check appointments or follow-up visits or in between with your medical oncologist or even a follow-up with your surgical oncologist. Measuring your weight is one of those basic things, but they may not know what your ideal body weight is. And that's where the extra added skills of an oncology nutritionist and a rehabilitation specialist who is very familiar with cancer can help out. We speak about all of this as a quality of life issue, and what I've seen in practice over many years is that as much time as you spend at the hospital, at the infusion center, at the radiation oncology center, going to and from treatments, there's a lot of downtime. And often during that time, people, obviously everybody's thinking about their cancer and their treatment and hoping that the treatment will be successful and that it's going to work. People often spend a lot of time reading information. For us, used to be in the library, now online. And much of that information doesn't apply or is not exactly suited for each individual as it would be from your treatment team. If you take that energy and that brain power and apply it to the three things that we discussed today, getting a handle on your nutrition, keeping your weight as close to ideal body weight as possible, having a reasonable amount of activity, and reasonable is very broad depending upon you and your cancer and your treatment and what your physical activity level was like to begin with and what your limitations are as a result of having had cancer, and getting good rest and sleep to help with the fatigue. If you put those three things together, that's something that your team can't do for you. All of us can give you information, back to the communication, advise you about all the latest scientific findings in this area. But people get into this idea that it's somehow their fault. But these cancer and its treatment directly affect weight and energy. And it's important for us to really put aside that this is a lack of moral fiber or this is just because somebody isn't trying hard enough, but turning the attention that we're putting on activities that may not pay off so much and really putting it into getting information and getting consultations locally to help find out what is the ideal program for you. So at anybody who's getting treated at an accredited cancer center will have access to an oncology-trained nutritionist as well as a physical therapist or a physical medicine or rehabilitation specialist. Many of the cancer centers across the country now participate in the STAR program, which is a rehab program, a physical rehab program particularly aimed at cancer patients. And we've moved along so much with all of the new scientific evidence that activity is so important that I've heard only in the last few months a new term called prehab, which is that we ask our patients to get consultations from the nutritionist and the physical medicine rehabilitation specialist up front to avoid a lot of weight loss or weight gain and getting very tired and not being able to have as much activity as they want. So these services are available. If you're in the middle of treatment, ask your providers to get you referrals. Some of it is paid by insurance. Some of it is done at the cancer centers without a bill because it's so important to have these functions already in place as optimally as possible. So just to sort of break this up into two groups, the weight loss is common from cancer. It's sometimes brought on by cancer treatment, sometimes because the cancer hasn't responded, sometimes even if it has, but the lack of good nutrition during cancer treatment is what can cause weight loss. Weight loss can make your quality of life suffer, but can also be quite serious. So losing ideal body mass, losing the muscle mass to help you carry yourself around and do things during the day is really, really important to protect, and that's why we're making so much of a point about good intake and proper intake. It's not just the number of calories, but the kind, especially high protein foods and drinks or supplements. There are some medications that can be used to help sort of fool the body a little bit metabolically and not lose so much weight. Again, this is very individual, depends upon your cancer, your treatment, other illnesses, from person to person, and that's why getting the consult on the scene arranged through your providers is really important. But on the other hand, we spoke about weight gain. It's often, most often in two groups of patients, patients with breast cancer or prostate cancer that have had hormonally based treatments, and hormonal fluctuations with or without cancer often cause changes in weight, and we certainly see it here. Somebody a number of years ago was kidding around and thought that mac and cheese was probably the most sought-after food during chemotherapy. Maybe it varies from region to region across the country and around the world, but getting a food that is satisfying and healthy is definitely possible. And you can speak with the nutritionist and get more information about what is best for you. But foods that don't cause a lot of weight gain and that preserve lean body mass can also be fun and can also be very, very tasteful and satisfying. So a combination of the good food, the proper calories, the right amount of calories, the protein sources, as well as a reasonable amount of activity during treatment is important. So if you haven't had these prehab, rehab, or nutrition consults, please ask your providers to help arrange them. So I think compared to the high-tech aspects of the treatments that we receive in chemotherapy and radiation therapy, this seems so simplistic, but it is rather individualized, and there are two basic groups here, but the principles of good nutrition, reasonable amount of activity tailored to your abilities, and good rest and sleep are pivotal whether you're gaining weight or losing weight, and the details really depend on the differences between people and cancers and treatments. I will stop here so we can leave enough time for questions. Thank you, everybody.
Oh, thank you very much, Dr. Fleischman. That was really excellent and really very helpful. And we've not heard the term prehab before, so everyone has heard that term on this call for the first time. And I appreciate your bringing that up. And also just the need for the individualizing it with your healthcare team, very important. So thank you. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A as well. And our next speaker is Sarah Kelly. And Ms. Kelly is an oncology social worker. She's coordinator of older adult services at Cancer Care. And it's my pleasure to turn the program over to Ms. Kelly. She is going to be addressing the services that Cancer Care provides through our professionally trained oncology social workers. Those services are free, and also the role of support groups. My pleasure to turn the program over to Ms. Kelly.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and I'd like to thank everyone on the call. I think it's been a fantastic call. You know, as Carolyn said, I'm an oncology social worker here. I work with many people and their loved ones who are concerned with healthy eating, managing weight during treatment, and we've gotten such great information today. And, you know, we've been talking about managing your care. We've been talking about quality of life. And I'd really like to talk about the importance of creating a support network as part of that care and how Cancer Care can be a part of that. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization that provides free professional support services to anyone affected by cancer. Our programs include individual counseling. We do that face-to-face in the New York City area. We also do it over the phone nationally. We have support groups, which we also provide face-to-face in New York and over the phone nationally. We also have online groups that we do nationally and internationally. We have education programs like the one we're all on today. We provide practical help, how to navigate the healthcare system, and we also have some limited financial assistance as well as chemotherapy copay assistance. All of our services are provided by licensed master's level oncology social workers, and they are completely free of charge. And oncology social workers really trained in how a diagnosis of cancer affects a person and his or her family and friends, so the support network. We're also trained to help patients and their supports tackle the problems that accompany the disease. You know, financial demands, physical changes, such as we've been talking about today, the social adjustment that comes with that, psychological impact, and overall care. And I think adjusting to and finding ways of coping with the diagnosis really is an important part of the healing process. So as you know, cancer affects the whole person and also the support network, the family and friends. Asking for help by joining a support group or by contacting a social worker for counseling is a sign of strength, and that's really something I'd like for you to take home with you, that you don't have to walk this path alone. You know, if you join a support group, you're connecting with others who are going through something similar, having similar problems. With individual counseling, you really have a space that's yours to voice any concerns that are coming up. And I feel these connections really help lessen the isolation that many people with cancer, and that includes caregivers, are experiencing. When you're feeling well emotionally, it really helps you better deal with the diagnosis and also going through the treatment. Right now, we are offering, of course, the individual counseling, many different online groups, telephone groups, and face-to-face groups. If you are interested in any of these services, please call us on our Hope Line, and that's 1-800-813-HOPE. And that's 1-800-813-4673. And, you know, I know you guys have this information in your packets, but I just wanted to give it to you again. And I also recommend logging on and checking out our website. It's www.cancercare.org. It is a really comprehensive website. It has so much information on, you know, diagnosis, treatment, coping, as well as a listing of all of our services. So there's just a lot you can find on that website. You know, we've learned a lot from today's program. There's a lot of information to digest and get your arms around. We're here. You know, I think the social workers can help you understand what it means for you and your loved ones. We can help you prioritize. We can help you rehearse questions for the doctor or the medical team to get the answers and information you need. So really remember, you're not alone in this. You don't have to walk the path alone. Cancer Care Services are here to help you. Thanks so much for your attention and the opportunity to talk today.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah. That was wonderful. And a wonderful explanation of the services of cancer care and how an oncology social worker can really help all of you. And now we have time for questions. We have a lot of time for questions. I'm going to ask Danielle to explain to all of you how to queue up and ask questions. And let's see as many of your questions that we can take as possible. If we do not get to your question today, please call us at 1-800-813-HOPE. Or if you think of a question in a couple of days, you can call us as well. And I'll repeat all that information at the end. But let's go right to the questions now.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you have a question at this time, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you would like to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. And our first question comes from Shirley M. Your line is now open.
Hello, thank you. This has been excellent. Clinical trials are on the agenda, and though they were not mentioned, my question is, when you consider a clinical trial, if you read that there is severe diarrhea as a result of a clinical phase 2 clinical trial that you're being suggested for, and you note that up front, that they're saying people who have joined it have had this issue, and how do you choose, how do you know that that's really good to try when it's so important that nutrients be absorbed, I think, by the intestine? It's like a double-edged sword. How do you make that decision, or can you give me some guidance on this?
And Shirley, that's an excellent question. I'm going to ask Dr. Ligabel and Dr. Fleischman to address the question because that's such an important question. Dr. Ligabel, do you want to go first?
Well, sure, although I think in some ways a dietitian might be a good person to talk about this too because, in terms of dietary strategies for diarrhea may be helpful for this as well. But I think when an individual has an advanced cancer and is trying to choose between therapies, there are obviously a number of different considerations that will need to come into play when you make a determination what's the right therapy for you, because typically in that setting, we don't we don't know what the best drug for an individual person is. So this, it is often a decision, you know, based on what is the likely efficacy of an agent versus what are the known side effects, as well as what are the known side effects of agents that are not part of a clinical trial that you would also use for treatment in that setting. Unfortunately, so many of the drugs that we do use to treat cancer can cause diarrhea or constipation, and these are both side effects that can be very difficult for people to deal with. So I don't think that there's a right or a wrong answer for whether one should consider a trial if an agent causes diarrhea. There are some of the new targeted therapies that have had really wonderful successes in otherwise hard-to-treat diseases that can cause diarrhea. I think that you really need to kind of balance that side effect in the context of the likelihood that the drug would be effective in controlling the disease and what the other side effects of that agent compared to other agents that are available would be.
Thank you. And Dr. Fleischman, could you comment on some of the methods of dealing with treatment side effects, such as...
Well, great question and a good answer. When we offer clinical trials, we're obligated to list potential side effects, and it's important to remember that they don't happen to everybody. Some do, some don't. Some people go through clinical trials without having experienced the list of things that is presented at first, which seems scary and daunting. So an important follow-up question is, well, so far, how many people have had a severe side effects? And that may be known and it may be not known, but it's a good question to ask. As far as the diarrhea goes, working with your physician or advanced practice nurse and the oncology nutritionist or dietitian in your center is the way to go. Yes, foods are really important. Medications can also help out. The balance of that is essential, and it just seems like it's the same three elements, but everybody realizes, especially when it comes to constipation, that a certain amount of activity can help all that also. So it's back to the same three basics, with the idea that in a special situation that the nutritionist or the dietitian and your oncologist or advanced practice nurse will work together to match the foods and the medications that are possible to use with the clinical trial.
And Mary, did you also want to add something? That sounds like you have a very important role here too.
Definitely, and you're exactly right that diarrhea certainly has an impact on your absorption. And one thing that we always try to quantify first is how much diarrhea are you having? Are you just having kind of soft, mushy stools, or is it kind of running out? And then certainly looking at your diet, there's key offenders that commonly influence diarrhea, like lactose or caffeine, fatty foods, fried foods, et cetera. And if someone is not eating any of those, like Dr. Fleischman said, you may need to resort to some kind of medications for treatment. So it's looking at the whole picture again just to sort out what could be the underlying etiology.
The other thing that when you're in a clinical trial, I think Dr. Fleischman pointed out that indeed you are informed of all the potential side effects that they're aware of. But you're also, you really do receive rather exquisite care in terms of your management by the team there. And if you have that concern, Shirley, about you, this is something you might be interested in, to talk to the team about how they would manage it in your particular situation. And to really say that that is a big concern of yours because you have to continue functioning and that would be a big problem for you. And I think that communication with the team is very important. Also, the technology for managing many of these side effects has improved significantly. And Dr. Fleischman, can you address that?
Now there is a better understanding of how we can use both newer medicines as well as the side effects of old medicines in very creative ways. So it's important to make sure that the technology isn't only directed at helping the cancer, but making us feel as well as we can during the treatment.
Well said. Thank you. Excellent. Thank you very much. This is a wonderful team response here. And our next question, please.
And our next question is from Marjorie G. Your line is now open.
Hi there. Thank you very much. Dr. Fleischman, you mentioned a STAR program for cancer rehab. Can you please give us some more information about that?
Oh, you're going to ask me to remember what that stands for. I could look it up while I'm speaking, but there's now an accreditation that some places can get through their rehab departments in the cancer centers for a special physical therapy program that is specialized for the needs of cancer patients, both during treatment and for cancer survivors. It's called STAR. I'm looking it up now because I really didn't remember this. Survivorship Training and Rehabilitation Program. There are websites, oncologyrehabpartners.com, and a number of the places that I visit when I do the certification visits are applying for this. Some have achieved it, and they have really embraced the idea of prehab as well as rehab. I look online and then speak with the people at your cancer center directly. It seems like a really good thing.
And actually, I just want to comment on that. One of our speakers, who happens to be a doctor of physical medicine and a cancer survivor, has been very important in developing that program. And I would definitely, as Dr. Fleischman has said, look up STAR program. It is in different centers, and it's a wonderful program. And if it's not in your center, a lot of things that you're hearing today are things that hopefully you can implement as well with your own healthcare team. But having a program like that is so important, having all the pieces in place. Anyone else want to comment on that?
Yeah, yes. My experience is that many of the cancer centers already have the building blocks of the STAR program in place even before they apply. So even if your center doesn't have it, you can specifically find what you need through the nutritionists and through the rehab people that are already in place.
Excellent. Thank you. And our next question?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Once again, you may submit a question on the web by clicking Ask a Question.
And we have a question from one of our online participants. Are there any tips or hints you share with patients when they complain of taste changes? Dr. Ligabel, do you want to try that one?
I'm hoping that Mary. The nutrition expert Mary, may okay. have some gold here. I think that sometimes certainly people have, there are two kind of taste changes that people experience. Some of them, foods that normally would taste good don't taste good. Other patients will complain of a metallic taste in their mouth, especially with some chemotherapy agents. Taste changes can be very difficult to overcome, especially in the advanced disease setting where people receive therapy on an ongoing basis. One of the things that we sometimes try are to, try different foods to see if sometimes things that didn't used to be appealing become more appealing taste-wise. I've had patients who, for whatever reason, can't stand anything sweet, but salty things are more appealing. So some of it's a little bit of trial and error. I don't, unfortunately, have much more insight than that, but would be interested to hear what the nutrition people think.
Mary?
Well, this is Mary, and some strategies that we use is if you are experiencing metallic taste, then try to use plastic silverware. Try to brush your teeth right before you're going to eat to get that film or bad taste out of your mouth. Some patients say that is extremely helpful. Most of the time, you just have to flavor the food more, so using things like salsa or more flavorful herbs like rosemary and adding mint to things, those kinds of things can kind of get through the mouth blindness and then it actually help you taste things a little bit better. The big thing you want to avoid is adding lots of salt to your food because that can compound the problem of increasing your blood pressure and holding on to fluid. And I know it might make the food taste better, but that's kind of like the last thing you want to try.
Excellent. We have another question, actually. I just want to comment on that, too. Sometimes also people have a metallic taste, not just from their chemotherapy, but also from radiation treatments to the head and neck area. So I don't know, or in that area in any way near there. And Mary, can you comment on that as well?
Yeah, head and neck cancer patients frequently have lots of different taste changes. Plus, they have the mucositis, which makes it very difficult to eat. So, again, sitting down with the individual and going through, what are you doing, and let's see how we can change or augment the flavor in what you're having or able to consume is a way to sort of work around that problem. But I'd say for head and neck cancer patients, one of the big things is just making sure that the oral cavity is clean and getting that paste out of there right before you're going to eat.
Well, these are wonderful questions. I must say this has been an extraordinary call. We do have one more question. Please discuss any specific metabolic changes that contribute to taste and appetite changes, as well as the loss of lean body weight and muscle during cancer treatment. Dr. Fleischman, can you address that?
You've done a whole hour teleconference on this a few years ago. Yes, you're right. There are lots of metabolic changes. The ones in weight loss are a little bit better understood than weight gain, but the very, very summary version is that your body generates a lot of calories and uses a lot of calories when the cancer is growing and during treatment to metabolize all of the drugs and everything, and that then results in weight loss and fatigue, and changing that around is difficult, but the three things I mentioned plus some medications can help are really the way to go, and it's very individual.
Excellent. Well, this has been an extraordinary call. Wonderful speakers on the call today, and I want to remind everyone this is a one-hour workshop, and that in planning a program like this, we recognize that you all have many needs that go far beyond the scope of a one-hour program. And so I do want to remind you about many of the much of the information that Ms. Kelly provided to you about the services that Cancer Care offers. We are a we're a national organization, and we provide services to people all over the country. You can call us at 1-800-813-HOPE or visit our website at www.cancercare.org. We have a wonderful staff of oncology social workers to help you with all kinds of practical and financial concerns, as well as with concerns about getting additional support with counseling or someone to talk to, and support groups as well. We have a lot of these types of programs, a lot of workshops coming up, and we also have a number of publications that we produce as well, and, of course, a wonderfully robust website. Most importantly, as we're about to conclude the program, I don't want any of you to think that you're alone in coping with cancer. I want you to know that you're part of this cancer care community, and we want you to feel free to call us at any time at our phone number or visit our website. That's very important to access all this help on a regular basis. I also remind you that we do have a program coming up on managing the costs of living with cancer on Wednesday, June 25th. And I would encourage you to, if you haven't already, to sign up for that program. It's very relevant to some of the concerns that we've discussed today. And I just want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may disconnect. Everyone, have a wonderful day.